Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 891, Bola Sekunbi, founder of Clever Girl Finance.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
We downsized everything. We went from living in a 5-bedroom house into a tiny little apartment. We went from having multiple cars to just one car.
For many women, especially those who are women of color, access to financial education isn't as readily available. But our guest today is trying to change that once and for all. Welcome back to So Money, everybody. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Today, we're welcoming the founder of Clever Girl Finance, Bola Sekunbi. Bola received an early lesson in money when her father became ill and had to stop working unexpectedly. The problem with this was that he'd used up all of his money to send her three brothers to college and didn't have any money left over for Bola to further her education. Luckily, it was her mother who began out as a homemaker, told her that she would pay for Bola's schooling from the money that she'd set aside from her side hustles and entrepreneurial pursuits over the years. Because of her mother's hard work, Bola was able to leave Nigeria, get an education, and go on to found her own business, empowering women to be financially savvy. Her company, Clever Girl Finance, has helped thousands of women over the years receive the coaching and financial education they need to advance their lives. Bola is also the author of the forthcoming book, Clever Girl Finance, Ditch Debt, Save Money, and Build Real Wealth. It will be available on June 25th. Here's Bola Sekunbi. Bola Sekunbi, welcome to So Money, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
I'm so thrilled to have you on, especially now as you are about to launch your book. And for listeners who may have been, you know, listening to So Money for several years now, you may remember Bola was on the show back in 2017, the summer of 2017. You and I co-hosted an Ask Farnoosh jam session, and we tackled a lot of listeners' debt problems. You, Bola, are the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance, which is one of the top destinations for financial literacy, financial empowerment, particularly for women of color. And your story started back in Nigeria as a little girl. Your mother was your, you call her your hustle queen, and has been for many years like the inspiration for you. So let's start there. I think that going back to our money story and the earliest of beginnings is always crucial and insightful. And I know that's a big part of your overall journey. So tell us about the hustle queen mom that you had and what you learned from her.
Yeah. So my mom got married really young. She got married when she was 19 years old. My dad was a little older, and she didn't go to college. She just had her high school diploma, and she got into this marriage, had four kids. And while having kids, my father got this really amazing job in Austria. And so they moved their lives abroad from Nigeria and they settled there. And as my mom was kind of navigating life in a new country and raising four kids, I was born in Austria. She started to see things with her friends that she didn't like. So a lot of her friends like her were stay-at-home moms, which is, you know, great, especially when you have four young kids to raise. But at the same time, she was realizing that a lot of her friends had no idea about their family finances, what their husbands did with the money, how much their husbands were earning. As she was getting older, she started to see some of her friends getting divorced. And because they had no idea about the finances, they were, you know, left with nothing. There were many conversations I was eavesdropping on with my mom and her friends, with her consoling them, saying to them, "I'm so sorry, I'll try to help you." There are many times where we had friends, her friends sleeping over at our house. And on the flip side, it was also that because they didn't know where the finances were, if their husband unfortunately passed away, in many instances, the husband's family would come in and just take over everything, and that the woman again would be left with nothing. And so my mom decided that after she had me, she just didn't want that to be her case. And my mom decided that she was going to go to college and be able to start creating her own financial contributions to our household, and also start putting money aside for herself. So at the age of about 34, my mom started her first undergraduate degree, held me by the hand. I would go to her college classes and she would put me in the corner and tell me to shh. So she went on to do that. She got her undergrad, got two master's degrees. We moved back to Nigeria. My mom went into investment banking. And from there, she just started hustling. She opened a hair salon. She opened a daycare center. She opened a bakery. She had a soft drink distribution franchise. And she was just hustling and putting money aside because she was just terrified of not having any options. And so fast forward about, you know, several years later, I was getting ready to go to college, and my dad had a major financial downturn, in the sense that he had to retire about 15 years earlier than he had planned. And in the grand scheme of someone's retirement planning, 15 years is a big deal. So we downsized everything. We went from living in a 5-bedroom house into a tiny little apartment. We went from having multiple cars to just one car. And at that time, my father had spent a lot of his earnings sending my brothers to school abroad, because at the time in Nigeria, the economic system was not stable. And so it was taking people 7, 8, 9, 10 years to get through college because there was always strikes. And so my mom was like, well, my parents were like, well, we can't afford to send you to college. We can't afford to send you to college abroad. So we're just going to have to figure out how you're going to go to college here. And at that point, my mom was like, okay, I've been putting money aside. I'm going to step up and pay for your college education. It's not your privilege. It's not your right. I'm doing you a favor. And your agreement is that you're going to seek scholarships where you can. and you're going to get good grades and make me proud because I'm doing this for you at the expense of my own retirement. Wow. And the only reason why my mom was able to do that was because she had been hustling and hustling and putting money aside. And she was able to step in and not just support my dad, but also support me going to college, which was, you know, a huge deal and a gift I'm forever grateful for. So that's, you know, part of the early stages of my money story. Wow.
I'm stuck on that scene of you going to college classes with her and she's shushing you in the corner. My goodness.
Yes.
Can you imagine doing that today? Do you have children?
Yeah, I have 5-year-old twins.
There's no way I could take my son to a college
class. No way. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd have to bring the iPad.
What's funny is that I went back to college in Austria, and I remember taking a class, and there was this professor, and she kept telling me, "There's something so familiar about you," and I was like, "I've never met you.
What?
I don't know you." And then I randomly mentioned it to my mom, and my mom was like, "That was one of my professors, and you were always in her class with me."
Wow!
And you were like 4 or 5 years old.
That gives me goosebumps. That's really life, like coming full circle in some ways. Okay. So tell us about your mom today. And I also want to know, you know, how did your mother's hustle and your mother's pursuit of financial independence impact her marriage? Did you witness any of that? I don't know, because traditionally that probably wasn't expected of women. It wasn't, women weren't normally in that position of being, you know, working and making money mm-hmm. and being financially independent. And how did that impact her relationship, you think, with your dad?
So I'll start off by saying that my parents are still married. This is their 50th year anniversary.
Wow.
But growing up, it was a lot of battles. It was a lot of stress. My dad was just not about that life. Like, what bakery? What master's degree? What is this nonsense? He just wasn't having it. But my mom stood her ground and she fought back. And I remember there was a time where my parents, their marriage was going through a lot of strain because my mom just wanted to stand on her own 2 feet. And she took me and she moved with me to New York, Albany, New York, and with my dad for a couple of years. And she went about getting another master's degree, you know, and they kind of sorted it out. But there was a lot of strain because my dad was resistant. A lot of his friends, you know, most of their wives are stay-at-home
right.
moms, not working, not bringing income, and they were the bosses of the home. But as time went by, my dad kind of got with the program.
Yeah.
And eventually when he went through that financial downturn, he realized, wait a minute, if not because of what this woman put herself out there to do, mm-hmm. this would be a completely different story.
Wow. Okay. How proud is she of you today? And I want to talk
so
about
proud.
Clever Girl Finance, right? And what was the impetus for that? Was there always this idea of becoming your own boss and helping other women with finance? But how is your relationship with your mom today?
So my mom and I are very close. She's kind of like half and half here and in Nigeria. And today my mom is a nurse. She followed her passion after she left investment banking. She always wanted to be a nurse. Her older sister is a midwife. And it's something that she always wanted to do but never got around to doing. And so now she is today. And she does that part-time. She's an infant nurse. And so when I had my twins, she was amazing. And she's just proud. She's like, I don't really understand everything that you do, but I'm proud of you because you're teaching other women about money. You're teaching women to stand on their own 2 feet. And she would always tell me, you must never be a liability on anybody else, including yourself. So starting Clever Girl Finance is interesting because I didn't start it because I didn't have the dream to start something. Oh, my mom did all these things. I'm going to start this business. It just kind of came to me by accident. So I'd always liked, you know, talking about money, saving money. You know the story of when I first graduated from college, saving 100K, talking to my friends about it, and them asking me questions. And what I found is that as I got older, got into my early 30s, you know, having kids, I started to see a lot of my friends, you know, getting married, getting divorced, becoming stay-at-home moms. And a lot of the things I saw happening with my mom and her friends when I was a child, I started to see it happening with my friends and I, where my friends, you know, some of us wouldn't know anything about finances, or divorces would happen and it would be just really difficult to navigate finances and make sure that they came out on their own 2 feet. So that was one of the inspirations for starting Clever Girl Finance. I was like, wait a minute, I want to do something that is impactful. I was also in this space after having my twins where I think was a little bit of postpartum depression, where I just felt like, you know, what I was doing at work wasn't very meaningful, even though I liked my job. And I was sort of searching for something else to do. And so I was like, why don't I just talk about my experience with saving money and how I taught myself how to invest and, you know, my mom's story and things like that. And that's where Clever Girl Finance was born.
And who is your target audience specifically? And then I want to talk about some of the challenges that your audience faces and your kind of unique approach to helping women. So three questions, I guess, there. Sorry. Who's your audience? What are their challenges? And how are you meeting them?
So my audience is women who are going through life transitions. It's a platform open to all women. Obviously, I'm a woman of color, so I tend to attract a lot of women of color. And, you know, that's really awesome. A lot of us don't grow up having conversations about money at the dinner table. And so it's basically a platform for women who are going through life transitions. It could be graduating from college. It could be negotiating your salary or switching between jobs. It could be having your first child or getting married or getting divorced or wanting to start a business or wanting to plan for your child. Whatever life transition you're going through are, you know, the women that we target and that we create content to accommodate. Some of the major issues that I find with our target audience is that it's just the lack of knowledge. And it's not because we're not smart. We're incredibly smart. We're graduating from colleges at record pace. We are opening businesses at record pace. It's just, we weren't raised talking about money. And the people that we go to have conversation about money with don't necessarily have the best information to give us because they also don't know. And so because of this, we live in this day and age where you should know what a budget is, you should know what a stock is, you should know all these fancy financial terms. And so a lot of us, a lot of women I interact with will say, yes, I do know, but they may not necessarily be that comfortable talking about it because in actuality, they don't know. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of self-judgment. They feel all these mistakes with money and that they're bad with money. There's a lot of comparison because my friends are doing this and this and that, and I should be at this level. And so it's really just supporting them to break down the barriers and make them understand that everybody has to learn how to be, you know, good with money. And it's a skill you learn, like riding a bike or learning to swim, and there's no shame in it. And so the approach of Clever Girl Finance is, if you cannot laugh, you're going to cry. So you might as well just laugh.
I like that philosophy. Yes, I'm on board with that.
And so we just make it fun. Our approach on social media with our content is to make it fun, to make it a little bit, you know, shady or like, you know, snazzy. Mm-hmm. But we try to make the approach something that you can just talk about in everyday conversation and make it part of the new normal, where it's okay to talk about money. It's okay to talk about incomes. It's okay to talk about investing. It's okay to talk about debt and how you're going to get yourself out of it. It's okay to start having these conversations. And what's really important for me is that by having these conversations, by making women feel comfortable to talk about money, we're also going to be comfortable to talk to our children about money. And then we will start to change that narrative where, you know, money now becomes something that we talked about at the dinner table with our kids, and they can grow up having, you know, money knowledge as just part of their upbringing.
And you do this across so many platforms, the blog, the podcast, YouTube, you have coaching, and also you have a book coming out.
Yes.
Your inaugural book, aptly titled Clever Girl Finance. And is this more of the same that you can get through all of these other platforms, or does the book offer something, you know, unique or different that you won't get anywhere else?
So this book is essentially the book I wish I had when I was coming out of college and trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do with my $40,000 after taxes salary. And one of the unique things about this book is that I'm sharing financial concepts. I'm sharing my story. I'm sharing a lot of how-tos, but I'm also helping women understand that my story and, you know, all these financial how-tos, learning how to do them is not unique. And so I feature other women throughout the book that have come from a variety of different backgrounds and have accomplished really major things with their finances, from paying off student loans while supporting their family, from getting out of almost $1 million in debt, from navigating paying off debt with their spouses. I'm featuring women who have done these incredible things just to help my readers, the women who are going to be reading this book, understand that these things are happening every day and they're not isolated incidences. And it's all a matter of being intentional. So that's really, you know, a part of the book that makes it unique.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So, finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/SoMoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/SoMoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/SoMoney.
I'm sure you're reading a lot of articles these days, and there seems to be like sort of a cultural inflection point. People are a little annoyed with like personal finance advice, right? Because there's so many systemic problems in the world. There are, right? There's racism, there's sexism, mm-hmm. there's institutions that don't necessarily care about, you know, consumers. They're out to get you. And that's a big part of the problem. And I'm sure you've heard within your community things like feedback, like I didn't get the raise because I feel like I was, you know, because of discrimination or because, I sort of feel like the system is stacked against me. How do you address those issues within Clever Girl Finance? Those issues that aren't necessarily, we don't feel we have control over, but yet are such a big part of our ability to succeed.
I mean, those issues definitely exist. I hear them all the time. But, you know, when it comes to creating the life you want to live, right, the issues are always going to be there. There's always going to be racism. There's always going to be, you know, all these different issues that exist. And, you know, over time, maybe they will resolve themselves, but they're going to be there and they're there right now. Let's put it that way. And so by getting your personal finances in order, it ties directly into how you're able to navigate yourself around these issues. Because when you have your finances in order, you're able to give yourself options. You don't get the promotion at work because of racism, because of gender issues, then guess what? You can, because you have money in the bank account to support yourself, you can quit that job and find something else that you're really going to love, that's really going to value you, you know, given your skill set and what you bring to the table. But when your finances are all over the place and you're like, oh my God, I have, you know, I'm living paycheck to paycheck, I cannot quit this job, then you're forced to be in that situation and deal with that, whether you want to or not, whether there's a way around it or not. So I totally see where, you know, the backlash has come from personal finance, because there's all kinds of other issues. But at the same time, when your finances are in order, you're able to create options for yourself and you can find ways to navigate around those issues.
I agree. I mean, I think that there are a lot of, solutions, and it's an imperfect system. And I do still think that, and I think we agree on this, that personal accountability is a big part of the solution, right? Believing Absolutely. That you have the resources, the ability, the acumen to like do what's right. And you got to live below your means, pay off your debt, invest your money, ask for the raise. Like, so we're just going to stop telling people to do these things because, well, what's the point? You know, no, I think that, you got to control what you can control. And to your point, when you have a financial foundation, then suddenly you have more options. If you're drowning and you're not learning how to swim along the way, well, you're going to continue to drown, right? Exactly. Let's talk about, you know, some of the mistakes you made as you were arriving at,
oh my God,
you know, your adulthood and sort of, this is May. This episode is airing in the month of May, which is graduation month. And our partner, our brand sponsor for this episode is Chase. And we want to ask our guests, what is the one thing you wish you had learned about money upon graduating from college?
There were so when I graduated from college, I didn't know anything about money. I moved from Austria here. My parents were still in Nigeria, a whole new system of managing money. I'd never had a credit card, never been approached to own a credit card before, didn't know what a 401k was. I wish there were so many things I wish I knew, but I sort of figured it out. At the time, it was a little more difficult because there were not a lot of financial resources for people like me, for women. It was a lot of white male financial stuff that didn't really support, you know, women being financially well. I remember walking into a financial planner's office and I was like, I'm able to save this much money every month. And he's like, well, are you married? Where did you get the money? So there's a lot I wish I knew. But when it comes to mistakes, oh my God, I've made so many mistakes along my journey. But I'll tell you one that is, you know, the one I talk about the most, because it's also something that I think about because it burns, is I got to this point where I had saved all this money. I had six figures in my bank account. I was really, you know, I was so happy. I told my mom, my parents were proud of me. And I was like, well, I've been like scrimmaging and like being really frugal for so long. I deserve something really nice for myself. And so I was like, I'm going to buy a handbag. I'm going to go buy a Chanel handbag. And it was a bag I really wanted. I went and purchased this bag. It was my coveted item. You know, I didn't touch my savings to purchase it. I had put separate money aside for it. And so I bought this one handbag and I was like, wait a minute. A few months later, why don't I just get another one, right? So I kind of got into this space where I felt like I had all this money in the bank. And as opposed to being that aggressive saver that I had been, I sort of slowed down my savings every few months to purchase another handbag. And that's perfectly fine because it fit into my budget. You know, all of this was, you know, it was good. I wasn't in debt. I wasn't going. I was paying cash. But what was the problem with this situation was that I was buying these designer handbags, specifically Chanel. And I was not using them. So the cost per wear was non-existent. They were sitting in my closet and it was really ridiculous. My husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, was like, these purses are hideous. You're wasting your money. Why are you doing this? And one day I looked in my closet, you know, I think I kind of got over the hype and I was like, oh my God, all I can see right now are dollar bills stacked in here. So I spent, you know, a while getting them all together and I sold them. And luckily for me, I was able to sell all of them for more than what I paid, or exactly what I paid. That first handbag I purchased, the first handbag I purchased, I paid, I think, $2,800 for it, and I sold it for $5,400. Crazy. What? I don't even want to get into that. But anyway, that sounds like a win-win. But for me, it was a massive financial mistake because at that same time, which is where the irony comes into play, at that same time where I was buying, you know, the handbags, I was also starting to teach myself how to invest. And one of the stocks I was investing in was Amazon, but I just wasn't buying as much. And I ran through a calculator a couple of years ago and I was like, wait a minute, if I had taken that $2,800 or $2,900 and put it into Amazon at the time, in today's money, I would have over $35,000 from the one handbag. So that's a financial mistake. Obviously, I'm still a huge handbag girl, but very moderation these days. And yeah, so that's what I usually talk about.
Oh my gosh. But I'm really impressed that you were able to sell some of these bags for more than what you paid for. I've heard that about Chanel, that it's some women justify the purchase and they say, well, it's an investment because the value of these bags only continues to go up. And I feel like that's a false, it's like a falsehood that you tell yourself to make yourself feel better, but you actually lived it.
Well, I don't consider them an investment, right? For me, you can call it an investment because I was not using the handbags and I bought like the handbags that are considered their classic line. But you have to consider the fact that when you're selling these bags, you have to be selling them in pristine condition, which means you're buying a bag to keep in your house that you're not going to use because you're trying to invest it. What if it gets damaged? What if it gets stolen? And then you have to keep all the boxes and receipts and authenticity cards.
Yes.
And then when you're moving, you have all these other things you need to take care of. I mean, just put your money in something else.
Yeah, put it in a stock or put it in an index fund, right?
Exactly. If you're buying a bag, buy it because you want to use it and you're going to use it for its quality over time. It's going to last you years. Not as an investment.
I'd love to go back in time a little bit again and talk about when you journeyed into developing Clever Girl Finance. I recall that you won some grants and you entered some incubators. I don't know. I don't remember, but it was really inspiring, especially now as I'm developing a financial company for women. I'm new to all the like resources. And I just want to know, like, maybe the good question that we can all learn from your answer is like, as you're starting a company, what are some of the resources available to women business owners and women startup owners? Because I think raising capital for everybody is really difficult in the beginning. There's not a lot of like, I mean, people often tend to max out their credit cards. They sell their assets to build that really important cash flow and that stream to keep them going month to month. How did you do it?
So that's a really great question and one I actually don't get asked that I always want to talk about. So thank you for asking that. So when I started Clever Girl Finance, I started with personal money. And one of the things I did when I started was I started it as a part-time business. And I didn't want running my business to impact you know, the financial obligations that we had at home or like any of the plans that we had. So I worked at part-time for about 24 months. And while I was doing that, I was putting money aside to be able to last me 18 months of a salary so that I wouldn't have to like, you know, disturb what we were doing. During that process, I actually started to look for resources for women-owned businesses, for businesses in general. And to be honest, there's not a lot, especially, you know, you hear the stat about women funding and women being able to get capital. And I got to live that because it is really difficult. And so I just started looking for incubators because I was like, well, even if I can't raise capital right now, I can equip myself with knowledge to be able to grow and scale my business. So one of the programs I got into was the Goldman Sachs business program, mm-hmm. 10,000 small businesses, which is a $50,000 seat. Your seat costs $50,000, but everything is free of charge. It's over 4 months. The value of your seat is $50,000. So I did that. That was an incredible experience. I learned so much. And then just through my network and through advisors, I was able to apply to Techstars in New York City. And I got $100,000 equity investment in my business as well, which again was an incredible experience. The network is so amazing. And so being able to get into those two things was just basically networking and putting myself out there and going out to present myself and creating pitches to pitch to the judges on the application and just to impress people. And even today, I'm constantly, you know, it's not my comfort zone, but I'm constantly pitching. I'm constantly networking. I'm constantly going to meetings to introduce myself because even if the opportunities are not easily accessible, a lot of times you'll be able to find opportunities through the people that you meet and the people that you're able to impress upon your mission and what it is that you're trying to accomplish with your business. So for anyone who's listening, who's kind of in this space, like, oh my God, I'm not able to raise capital. I can't get funding. I've maxed out my credit cards. I didn't know what to do. Leverage your network, put yourself out there, find programs you can apply to, incubators, accelerators, and just, you know, just get out of your comfort zone. It's hard, but it's possible.
Yeah, that's really good advice. It seems like it's the only option in some ways. You know, we're starting our company and we were grateful to get a small business line of credit from Chase. SBA loan, which I know they're like really hard to get. And we self-funded a lot of Stacks House. We also had brand partnerships. But as we built the next few of these, sort of tapped out our personal savings. So now it's really looking into more brand partnerships, but also potentially these kinds of grants and incubators. Because what also you need in the beginning besides money is resources. Right. Yeah. So we found one program that would actually give us office space, which would be really a great savings. And also within that office space, you're with other like-minded entrepreneurs and other, like they have workshops going on all day. So it's sort of like a WeWork, but for startups and within this, financial institution, grooming the small businesses of tomorrow. I'll send you that information if you're interested.
Yeah. I'd love to know that. And some companies like Amazon and Google will give credits, cloud credits, online tool credits for like, you know, I know through Techstars with Amazon, I got, I think it was $200,000 of credits to use their services. And Google does like a $50,000 or $100,000 credit, depending on what program you go through. And they're always doing something. So yeah, it's all about researching.
Amazing. Tell us about a financial habit that you have now that helps to keep your finances in check, something that you do routinely and really consciously.
So one of the things I do, well, two things. One of the things I do is I make it as inconvenient as possible for me to spend money. And I just, you know, it's just my thing, because if I just have money sitting in my bank account for no reason, I'm going to find ways to spend it. And so what I do is I automate everything. As soon as I pay myself a salary or I get any, you know, any passive income, anything, it's immediately getting diverted into my savings or investment accounts. So I make it really inconvenient for me to spend money that I did not plan to spend. So that's one thing. And another thing that's now a habit is that I'm teaching my kids about money and I'm being very intentional about it. So I have a reminder on my phone once a month. They're 5 years old and they're learning about investing in stocks. And so they get $25 each and they get to pick based on brands they're familiar with. And we buy stocks every month.
Wow.
So yeah.
Do they get it? My son's almost five. Maybe I should start doing this with him.
So I tell them, so for instance, my son really likes Nike sneakers and Adidas. So I tell him, well, you can buy socks or you can buy shoes. And he's like, well, what does it mean? I'm like, it means you're an owner of the company. So initially they didn't understand what is a company, what is a stock, but they're starting to get it because we drove by an Adidas store and he said, I own the company.
Oh, wow.
So they're getting it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's such a great lesson. These are little exercises like this can go such a long way just because they're getting a fluency in the financial lingo, right? So when they're 12 or 13 and they hear the word stock market, they're not going to be like, what is that? You know, and it's the little things sometimes that can really accumulate over your lifetime, your childhood, that allows you to arrive at adulthood with a little bit more confidence and preparedness for the financial lingo and not a lot of the, I feel like people sometimes get really overwhelmed and intimidated by the system and the lingo and all the words.
Yeah. I mean, watch the financial news and you'll just like, oh my God, what was that word? What was that? And you start to feel overwhelmed. And that's when people start to say, well, the stock market is so hard and this is so hard, but a lot of that stuff, you don't even really need to, you know, like, some of the complex words, unless you're like a day trader, you don't even need to know them.
You really don't. And by the way, no, we're not saying anyone here should day trade. Gosh.
No.
Spend your time doing other things.
Other things, yes.
Congratulations on the book again, Bola. We want to send everyone to get a copy. So where's the best place to, I know the book comes out in a couple of weeks from the airing of this episode. So where's the best place to reserve our copy?
So the book is going to be available everywhere books are sold. It's going to be available as a physical book, an ebook, and also an audio book. I just got done the audio 2 days ago.
Oh, wow.
But you can go to clevergirlfinance.com/book. You can request it at your local library, Audible, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you can purchase books, you'll be able to find the Clever Girl Finance book.
So glad we got to reconnect. And I definitely look out for my endorsement of the book.
Yes.
So proud of you. So excited for you. Really, I appreciate all the work that you're doing for women. And I hope that we can meet up in person. I know we're both super busy, but let's do it.
Yes, definitely. And I can't wait for you to bring Stacks House to New York. I will be there.
Oh, you're definitely, you're on the top of my list for women that I want to invite to do programming and lead workshops and talks, because that's going to be a big part of, it is currently a big part of Stacks House is our programming, but we want to really build it out even more as we go to more cities. And especially in New York, there's so many amazing financial women here,
yes.
But it's truly, absolutely consider that done. That's happening.
Yay.
Thanks so much, Bola. Have a great day.
Thank you, Farnoosh.
Thanks so much to Bola. Her website is clevergirlfinance.com and she's on Instagram with many followers at Clever Girl Finance. And check out Bola's book when it's available, Clever Girl Finance, Ditch Debt, Save Money, and Build Real Wealth, coming out on June 25th. All of this information is at somoneypodcast.com. You can listen to previous episodes, download the transcripts, and if you want to send me a question for our Friday episodes, click on Ask Farnoosh, and you can leave a voicemail or type in your question. Very simple. And please follow me on Instagram at Farnoosh Tarabi for more inspiration behind the scenes, answering your questions on the go. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope your day is so money.
Hosted hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.